Welcome to the April 17th version of Third World View. For tonight's feature, Third World View Collective member Mark Becker interviews two Ecuadorian experts on the current political developments in that South American country.
Good evening. We have the privilege tonight of being with Catherine Walsh, Professor and Director of Latin American Cultural Studies Doctoral Program at the Universidad Andina Simón Bolívar, the Simón Bolívar Andean University in Quito, Ecuador, and Carlos de la Torre, who's the Professor of Political Studies at FLACSO, the Latin American Graduate Institution, also in Quito, Ecuador. And we are going to talk about the issues surrounding Rafael Correa's government in Ecuador right now. And just to quickly bring us up to speed, Carlos, could you give us a thumbnail sketch of who Rafael Correa is, where he comes from, why he's president right now, and what that means for the Latin American left?
Okay, Correa is part of the left turn in Latin America. Correa came to power after a profound crisis of political representation in Ecuador, where political parties were in real crisis. We had three presidents that were overthrown by a mixture of collective action of social movements and actions in Congress that legitimized the actions that social movements were promoting, which was to get rid of presidents. So Correa came with a post-neoliberal project to government in Ecuador. And I think that in his government you see a tension between a commitment for more equality and social distribution and a more authoritarian top-down project of political transformation.
Great. And Kathy, Ecuador is a country that has been known for a couple decades now for very strong social movements. Could you briefly summarize where these indigenous and Afro-Ecuadorian movements come from and why they're significant?
Mm-hmm. Well, we might say that in contemporary times, 1990 was the key pivotal year when the indigenous movement sort of reappeared in the public eye in a major uprising or rebellion where closed down basically the country for a couple of weeks and brought issues of demands that really weren't about cultural identity, but transformation of social structures and state in a new, different kind of political project. From the 1990s through the decade of the 90s itself, the indigenous movement showed themselves to be key political actors that government could not ignore. The Afro-Ecuadorian experience has been somewhat distinct. One could say that in a country like Ecuador, where blacks have not been even recognized in political documents until 1998 was the first time, that organizations have been much more locally based into regions of the area, one in Andean Valley and the other on the Pacific coast, but much more tied to local concerns and struggles and not a national project. Although during the 1990s, with the formation of Pachakutik, a political movement, Mark, that you've worked a lot around, the ties were built to think across differences of cultural differences, racial differences, differences of gender, of class, and to begin to think of a new political project. So at that point in time, indigenous movements and Afro organizations were really strongly allied, but began to break apart in 1998, basically with some of the things that Carlos mentioned, with the different overthrows of distinct presidents, but also the political agenda pushed by neoliberalism, which was to basically divide social movements and to not allow those kinds of alliances.
So one of the big issues, Rafael Correa's project is a citizens' revolution. And from an indigenous and Afro-Ecuadorian perspective, what does a citizens' revolution mean from a social movement perspective?
Well, we could say that the citizens' revolution comes from Correa and the government's project, not from social movements. So one of the key aspects I think to take into account is the distinction between the Constitution and the political project of government. The Constitution, the Constitutional Assembly, which was held from the end of 2007 through 2008 with the popular referendum that approved the Constitution in September of 2008, worked in a very participatory and consensus-based way with all different kinds of social sectors of society, not with political parties, to rethink the country and rethink the country from a different view that it also involved a lot of younger activists and intellectuals, which was an extremely important process. Really, in those kinds of discussions, the issue of citizen revolution was not the pillar or the marking point. That came afterwards, proposed by the government in many senses, and in my mind is a way to think about individuals that come from different histories, different cultural backgrounds, different issues of struggle, but as individuals, not as collectivities. And so Rafael Correa has said on a number of occasions and on his frequent radio shows every Saturday that one of his goals is to break apart indigenous social movement, but other social movements as well, because in the Citizens' Revolution, one does not need resistance because everyone's included.
Is Correa a socialist?
Well, Correa says that he's a socialist, so I am nobody to question that. I mean, if he claims that he's a leftist, he can be a leftist. But going back to the idea of Citizens' Revolution, the movement in which Correa started his political campaign in 2006, the idea was to create a broad movement of citizens against political parties. It was a very neo-populist type of appeal. We citizens, we the people against political parties that have stolen our will. So on the one hand, there was this idea in which all Ecuadorians were going to be part of this movement of citizens against politicians and political parties that were perceived as corrupt and as the source of all kinds of problems, including neoliberalism. But at the same time that they were imagining a movement of horizontal citizenship, they were creating Correa into the embodiment of the aspirations that everybody had in Ecuador. So I think that there has always been a tension between a more participatory participatory and socialist project, and a project that concentrated power in a leader and later on in the executive. So I agree with Kathy. The moment in which they were debating the new constitution was very participatory, especially under the leadership of Acosta. But at the same time, they were creating a type of political system that where there was concentration of power in the executive. And it was a moment in which politicians and political parties were perceived as the source of everything that is wrong.
And Carlos, you've questioned whether Correa is even a liberal, whether he's an anti-liberal. Could you say a little bit more about that?
Yes, I think that, I mean, Correa doesn't come from a partisan left. He was never a militant of any left-wing party. Even his knowledge of Marxism is very weak. I mean, in Ecuador, we all knew Marxism going to the university. So he comes from a Christian left. He studied under the Salesian Fathers. He was a missionary in Sumbawa. So he comes from that perspective, and he's a left-winger from that perspective. But I think that the Citizens' Revolution, the idea has been to go against political parties. And I think that because they have been concentrating so much power in Correa, and Correa considers himself to be the embodiment of the revolution, this, as other Latin American populist movements, does not respect pluralism, basic civil liberties, such as the right of expression. He's in a war with the media. I'm not saying that the Ecuadorian media is fantastic, but he doesn't allow any form of criticism in the media. And also, in what for me is much more worrisome, is about the autonomy of civil society and the autonomy of social movements. As Kathy was saying, there is a project of get rid of autonomous social movements because they represent particularistic interests and not the citizens of all Ecuadorians that are embodied in the government.
We're here on Third World View tonight talking with Carlos de la Torre, who's a professor of political studies at Flaxo in Quito, and Kathy Walsh, who teaches at the Simón Bolívar Andean University, also in Quito. So Kathy, what do you think about this idea of social movement autonomy and how that has played out for social movements over the last couple years under Correa?
Well, if we go back to the distinction between the Constitution, the Constitutional Assembly, and politics since 2008, since the Constitution was approved, I had the opportunity, the privilege to spend a lot of time in the Constituent Assembly working with folks there, and my sense that social movements had a kind of voice, not as sort of a separate sector, but as actively included, but oftentimes leading up many of the issues of debate. where probably for the first time, I think, in Ecuadorian political history, there was a need for more opposition or conservative factors within the assembly to understand what the issues were being debated. And so the process, in my mind, was a real pedagogical, methodological process where people really had to seek out sources to read, with whom to talk, to how to understand these issues before they could take a stance on it. And in that sense, oftentimes social movement intellectual leaders formed a real key role. And I think that was probably the first time in recent politics, at least recent politics in Ecuador as I know it, where social movement people weren't just viewed as those out there on the street resisting, but that they really had a base of thought that was behind their action and how could they contribute it. However, we know that once the Constitution was approved and policy began with the establishment first of a mining law by Correa a few months after the approval of the Constitution that seemed to go directly in the face of what the Constitution talked about, naming, for example, nature as the subject of rights, which is pretty radical. But how then one can open up a mining law that gives major concessions to transnational foreign corporations, that sets up a way to not consult with the communities themselves. So little by little, I think the message coming from the government was that not only do social movements need to be gotten rid of because the voice of resistance doesn't seem to jive with the notion of the citizens' revolution and citizens as the new focus, individuals, not collectivities, but also in terms of who knows best. So it's sort of this strange model where in the figure of what some might call a left president, and I think that's something we might want to discuss a little bit more, how do we understand left politics today in Latin America, but in the vision of a so-called left or progressive president, how does that president sort of assume authority, almost in a kind of paternalistic way, of knowing what's best, and that it's he, not even the government as a general entity, considered together, but it's the president that knows whether, in fact, mining concessions should be given, what companies should be invited in and others not. And so I think that is sort of the thing that gives us more discomfort with this whole process, that social movements no longer don't have a voice, but they're treated as somehow second-class citizens as long as they maintain their collectivity. And the minute they individualize themselves, then they can be included in this new revolution that's called the Citizens' Revolution.
Rafael Correa has been Ecuador's president since he was elected in 2006 and is seen as part of this movement toward the left. Carlos, could you contextualize that politically for us? What does that mean to you to call Correa part of the socialism for the 21st century, part of the pink tide in Latin America? Does that have meaning for you?
Well, I think that Correa is a leftist insofar as he's an anti-neoliberal, and the state is having a bigger role in, I mean, there is planning, there is a project of state formation, there is nationalism, and there is a symbolic feeling in which Ecuador wants to position itself as an independent nation in the international arena. So I think that's his leftism, is the form in which he considers that. But the problem is that it's a leftist government, if we allow them to call themselves a leftist government, that's what they say, in which they are not seeking the participation of the people. They know the route to liberation, and especially the president knows the route to liberation. And I think that there was always a tension between a very personalistic, authoritarian project and a more participatory project. Even in the Constituency Assembly, there were certain issues that were not debated because Correa was against that, such as abortion, gay marriage. So, I mean, he set the limits to certain debates. Of course, there were also some openings there, but at the same time, there was always this figure. And that, for me, was what was something that always worried me about this project of Correa, the personalization of power in an individual. And we are seeing that being carried to big extremes now, that we're going to have a vote on a series of reforms to the Constitution that, according to the law, were supposed to be done by a new assembly, and they are just going to vote for a yes or a no to a series of questions.
What do those questions mean broadly? Can you summarize their political significance?
Well, some of the questions have to do with the independence of the judicial power. Correa wants to have a bigger role of the executive in transforming the judicial power in terms of the kinds of rights that people who are going to jail have. And then there are silly questions, such as they are for going to ask people if they want to see animals being tortured. I mean, I say it's silly because, I mean, they are asking questions about the separation of powers in a liberal state. They also have questions about the independence of the press and if the government is going to control the media or not. But most people, I think, are not looking at the questions. It's a referendum on Correa. If people will vote yes, it's because they like Correa, and quite likely he's going to win this election.
And what's the position of social movements on this, Kathy?
Well, the indigenous movement, particularly CONAI, has taken a position against the referendum.
Why is that?
I think it's for several different reasons. I mean, one can, as Carlos mentioned, the construction of the questions in and of themselves. Two, that it goes against the Constitution as it was initially thought and established. And three, because it puts, once again, overwhelming power in the hands of the president.
Well, let me ask it this way. Was the 2008 constitution in Ecuador seen as the most progressive constitution Ecuador has ever had, right? Really, one of the leading documents? Would you describe it as that?
I would say that it's, in my mind, probably one of the most radical constitutions in the world. Why? I mean, one can ask why. For several reasons. Not so much in that for what it affords, but how it rethinks constitutional language. Taking a distance from what we might call a sort of Western logic and inserting other ancestral logics in the conversation. So the simple fact of thinking about nature as a subject of rights or talking about the notion of, in Spanish, what's called buen vivir, or what we might translate roughly is to a kind of collective well-being or living well, not living better, as a sort of a organizing principle for the entire Constitution, to rethink social institutions along that that axis and not along the neoliberal axis that's been present forever. To name racism, to name affirmative action, to talk about reparation, I think are important advances that, in essence, give a certain responsibility to state that state has never assumed before, to think with the populace that is Ecuador. And obviously that comes from the struggles of many years of social movements and particularly indigenous movement.
We're talking here on Third World View tonight with Kathy Walsh, who's a professor and director of the Latin American Cultural Studies doctoral program at the Universidad Andina Simón Bolívar in Quito, Ecuador, as well as Carlos de la Torre's professor of political studies at Flaxo, Quito, in Ecuador, about this alleged leftward movements in Ecuador. And Carlos, was this constitution a lost opportunity for Ecuador to reform its politics, or how do you view it?
I don't know. My feeling is that Ecuador has always had great constitutions. The 1998 constitution was praised as a multicultural constitution. The women's activists were really happy with it. And of course, later on, but not all social movements were happy with the constituent process because of the neoliberal touch that it had. So the 2008 constitution, I agree with Kat, is very progressive. But in Latin America, and I'm very cynical, we have always had great documents, but these documents have not go together with practices. And you see that in the government of Correa more than anywhere else, because it's a government in which you have an intelligentsia of post-neoliberal social scientists leading it. So if you look at the planning, at the National Development Plan, it's such a radical document. They want to have a decolonization of the nation. They want to have a different model of development. They want to strengthen civil society. They want to create a better democracy. But all of these are just words in a way, or it's perhaps an utopia that some of them believe in. And at that moment, they were really convinced that they were going to implement that. But the practices of the government has gone against several things that they have said in the National Development Plan and against the Constitution. Of course, the National Development Plan also translates all of these great ideas into going back to import substitution industrialization. But in a way, there has always been this idea of creating these fantastic documents in the history of Latin America and in Ecuador.
Well, let me ask this. Both of you are very critical of Rafael Correa's government. Can either of you say anything positive about his government?
Oh, yes. Well, yes. I mean, it's a government that stopped the neoliberal agenda that in Ecuador was not very strong to begin with. But second of all, it's a government that has increased social spending, and a government that has a commitment for the poor. It's a government that politicized political economy again. Economics was supposed to be a science of just experts, and those experts were neoliberal. The Correa government politicized political economy as a political issue. And so, I mean, there has been certain very good progresses. I don't like the idea of progress. Very, very good achievements in a government that's more committed to social justice, to equality. Now, we have to see, and I don't have empirical studies, of the quality of social spending, how efficient it is, and how, because if you look at the levels of poverty, they have not been reduced as much as they should have with all of the money that the government has had. And it's a government that has been very lucky. Ecuador depends on oil. The prices of oil are extremely high, and they have been spending all of that money, not only in programs to get votes, but also in long-term investments such as, I don't know, hydroelectric power plants and those things.
In the 1990s, Ecuador was known as having the strongest social movements in America, some of the strongest in the world, but now they've really lost the initiative. What can the social movement, or perhaps the swing of the left, do to regain the initiative in Ecuador?
Well, I think there's a couple of issues key to think about. And this has certainly been an issue of, I think, the left globally, whether the aim to work against the state or with the state. I mean, that's something that Marx talked about, that was a key element for some of Lenin's works, and certainly Gramsci and many of us associated with the left for many years have thought, well, maybe the state is not the key focus of struggle, but because of the authority that it carries, one cannot deny state. And I think one of the things that happened in 1990 with the emergence of a strong indigenous movement was to aim to transform the state, an issue that probably wasn't as key or essential for African descendant organizations who have typically, as I mentioned before, been considered totally outside state and have struggled despite state. But the fact that indigenous movements targeted the state and opened up the possibility of a different kind of transformation, a transformation that wasn't just class-based, which many of us that have training in the left have always thought on those terms, that we attack poverty, we attack the class structure, and somehow we're going to make things different. But what the indigenous movement argued is that class, in the Latin American context, and particularly in Ecuador, cannot be understood separate from race, ethnicity, and gender, that all of those have to be looked at together, and obviously we could add sexuality as well. And so that the ways that those get played out, I think, in the social movement struggles was extremely important. One can say maybe today that there's a going back to the issue of poverty and class as the key elements, where other kinds of differences are viewed as minor, because the notion that if everyone's included, then those differences really don't carry the same historical weight that they carried before. So to talk about the new project of government as new, that somehow leaves the past behind, I think is a danger that the left has committed sometimes in different places in the world. And rather than reflecting on and learning from those lessons, there's, again, a repetition. So in my mind, I think it's important to, again, think about what is the left today in Latin America? Is it some kind of a homogeneous entity? Or, in fact, is it a group of different intellectuals or politicians with different projects that don't necessarily link into a left project? Does a left project in Latin America and maybe more broadly in the Americas need to be rethought? Along what terms? I think those are the kinds of issues that are important to think about that also build bridges between the left in North America and the left in the America of the South.
Carlos, what do you think are some of the lessons that the rest of us should be learning or that Ecuador can teach the rest of us in terms of how to make a better world?
That's a very complicated question. I guess that if you were asking me that in the 1990s, I can say that we have the strongest indigenous movements in the Americas, and that was a very important democratizing force. the indigenous movement entered into a big crisis. I think that for a series of reasons. First of all, for political mistakes of the leadership when they entered into an alliance with a military guy in 2000, gave a coup d'etat. They call it a rebellion, but it was sort of a coup d'etat rebellion. And then enter into a government coalition with a right-wing, a nationally right-wing military guy, Gutierrez, that was really costly to the movement. And since then, the indigenous movement entered into, and I'm talking mostly about the indigenous movement because they were able to paralyze the country, they entered into a big crisis. And in that moment in which you have a crisis of political parties, a crisis of social movements, Correa was able to invent this idea of a citizen's revolution and present himself as a savior, as an outsider who was going to save the nation in this vacuum, this organizational vacuum. And he helped to destroy political parties, and now he's trying to destroy organized social movements. And it's very dangerous, because here we see what happens when you have an outsider who's controlling power and hegemonizing all power in one person.
So one final question. Where are things going to go in Ecuador? Are you optimistic for the future? What needs to happen? Or Kathy?
Optimism is difficult. With the Constitution, I held a lot of optimism that change was possible. However, in witnessing the processes of government, the politics in the last 2 years or so, it's more difficult to maintain optimism. If one looks at sort of the resilience or the ability oftentimes of communities that have historically been marginalized, excluded, and dominated to rejuvenate their resistance, that has always existed historically. And for me, that's where the optimism lies. I mean, to maybe not assume the state as the focus of change, to realize the state in and of itself has huge limitations, and maybe that's not the process for radical transformation, but to go back to community-based and maybe at a local scale change processes is maybe a light in a moment that where Correa talks about the long neoliberal night that's ended. It seems like there's a different kind of night that continues to go on where one does not see that optimistic light at the end of the tunnel. And so for me, to go back to local struggles and to rejuvenate there and to think about resistance from historical place is necessary in these moments.
Do you agree, Carlos?
Yes, but I would like to focus on something else. I mean, for the first time in Correa's government, we're seeing a left-wing opposition to Correa that is questioning his project that comes from social movement organizations and from some activists that were part of his regime. And in Ecuador, you have a left that never... In Ecuador, we never experienced a very deep authoritarian project. It's not Chile or Argentina. Or Peru, we have not had massive disappearances, state terrorism. So our left never really valued democracy. And if I want to be optimistic, is that we have to learn that to do any project of transformation, we have to build on the strengths of liberal democracy but make it radical, but not get away from some of the basic liberties that gives you a liberal democracy, and don't try to create a new caudillo. And that's something that perhaps we're going to learn from the mistakes of the Correa government, but that will take a while for that to sink.
Okay, thank you both. This is Mark Becker for the Third World View Collective talking with Catherine Walsh and Carlos de la Torre about the issue of social movements in the government of Rafael Correa in Ecuador. Thanks for joining us tonight.
Thank you, Mark.
Thanks, Mark.
Good night.
Well, that has been the April 17th edition of Third World View.
Third World View is written and produced by a collective of volunteers. We welcome your comments and suggestions. You can also contact us at the station if you're interested in joining our collective and helping to bring third world issues to the airwaves. Third World View can be heard every Sunday from 5 to 6 p.m. right here on WORT, your community radio.